hurt, but there's a new world out there. There is a world filled with lush and verdant landscapes, stunning architecture, and all manner of cultural gatherings. There are beautiful people there wearing fantastic clothing who never get old. They talk to each other, dance together, build houses, listen to lectures, go to concerts. They instantly travel to wherever they want to be, and they talk with whoever they want to talk with. They can dance, fly, run, or jump hundreds of feet into the air. There are no physical constraints in this world. People who've been there rave and gush about how amazing and compelling it is. Lots of people have been there, about 6.9 million, in fact. Probably 40,000 or so are there right now. And probably about $1.2 million has been spent there in the last 24 hours. Now, I'm not talking about the spiritual world, though it does bear some striking similarities to Emanuel Swedenborg's description of it. I'm talking about Second Life, the online, real-time, graphically rich virtual world created by San Francisco-based company Linden Labs. Second Life was started 4 years ago and is experiencing stratospheric growth in users, developers, and in money transacted in-world that is translating into a growing number of people making real-life money off of it. All this has caught the attention of the media as well as major corporations, some of whom are now using Second Life to do modeling and visualizations of new programs and products. It's a world that more or less mimics our world, in which users choose an avatar or animated figure to represent themselves. And then they travel around, meet new people, buy property, build houses, hang out, explore, and more or less do all the same kinds of things that we do in real life, but with a three-dimensional, non-physical freedom of movement that appears to be exhilarating. One thing that interests me about Second Life is that so much of its appeal appears to be getting to know other people. Somehow, communicating through the veil of technology seems to make talking to perfect strangers much less threatening than in more mundane circumstances. By typing in text that appears in bubbles above avatar's head, people are getting to know one another better than they ever have in real life. Second Life is perhaps the latest installment in what many are calling a revolution in human culture, comparable to the Industrial Revolution. Over the past 20 or so years, our world has undergone a profound shift with the rapid acceleration and deployment of information technology. 20 years ago, personal computers were still used mostly as fancy typewriters and calculators. The arrival of the internet, and along with it, ever faster computer processors, changed everything. Today, many, if not most of us, are plugged into the network world in one way or another, at one time or another, every day. Everyone has an email account, and nearly everyone now seems to transact a great deal of their lives through it. We spend hours in front of computer screens, mining the internet for entertainment, news, medical information, travel reservations, music, commerce, community, video, and just about anything we may be interested in. Most of us have cell phones and can't imagine how we ever live without them. College students send text messages with their friends 40 times a day. Executives stay constantly wired through their handheld BlackBerry devices. Grandparents watch grandchildren grow up via internet video phones. Political movements are launched via email campaigns. YouTube video clips are instantaneously forwarded around the world. Lost friends are finding each other on social networking sites. Home buyers are evaluating real estate on geographical mashup sites. Disaster relief is collected through online donations. Romances are being hatched on internet dating sites. Photo albums are being shared online, and anyone with a sharp enough wit has already started a blog. Through technology, we are constantly connected to one another, and to the world. My question is, what does this technological revolution mean for human community and spiritual connection? What can the church say to a world that has been so profoundly altered? I believe that there is a truth about human community underlying the information age, and that there is also a fallacy. The truth about our human nature is that we long for connection with one another. Our church teaches that we are designed for love. Love is the source and goal of the entire created universe. And when we love others, we glimpse the nature of God and reach toward fulfilling our ultimate destinies. Our foundational nature is to love, and loving is our greatest spiritual discipline as well. We incline toward it like sunflowers incline toward the sun. We come to life when we are connected with others. We learn about God when we experience reciprocal, self-giving love with another. The fallacy in the information age is the expectation that technology will be able to cure human alienation. In our excitement over the plethora of possibilities truly unleashed by the internet, some have tended to think that technology will be able to reach into the most fundamental needs of the human community and to cure its pain. But I'm not so sure it can go that far. Technology brings us closer together, to be sure, but I'm not convinced that it delivers on its promise to connect us with other human beings in ways that are truly immediate and authentic. It's a flirtation. It appears to give us unending opportunity for human connection, but as anyone knows who has spent hours sending email in front of a computer screen, it cannot come to life with the flesh and blood of human voice and touch. Now let's recall the story of Moses and the burning bush. I wonder what this 3,000-year-old story from the Hebrew Scriptures could possibly say to our 21st century virtual world. In this famous passage, Moses is out tending his flock when he sees a bush on fire. Strangely, it burns, but is not consumed. Then Moses hears a voice from the bush. It is God speaking to him. He tells him to remove his shoes, for he is standing on holy ground. Can we imagine the feel of those dusty leather sandals being removed from tired feet? Can we feel the skin on the soles of our feet settling into the warm, soft earth? Can we feel our heart pounding and our legs quivering in awe and excitement at this moment of spectral, mind-blowing presence with the divine? Can we imagine the intensity of that connection and the anticipation at receiving a direct communication from God? It is this moment that jumps off the page at me, filled with meaning for our 21st century human lives. When he took off his dusty sandals to stand before the presence of God, Moses entered into sacred space. Moses entered into a charged and dynamically vital presence with the divine. This is the connection we long for. This is the connection that brings us to life. When we stand with awe and wonder in the presence of the divine, we begin to understand that we are not alone. We begin to understand that we and the world are absolutely beautiful, that everything is connected, and that we may have a special contribution to make, just as Moses did. We also enter into sacred space whenever we engage another person with our full presence. When we meet another with our full intention, full attention and intention, our full honesty and heart, we create space that is just as sacred as Moses' dusty ground. Into this kind of space, we are able to hear the deep needs and desires of another, to experience love, to hear and to understand anger, to negotiate conflict, to understand and to be understood. This kind of sacred ground between people is intense, and it's intimidating to a lot of us. A lot of us tend to avoid it. It's a lot easier to check our email. But the burning bush is not a virtual experience. Can you imagine a digitally rendered burning bush on Second Life? Can you imagine an animated avatar named Moses removing his sandals to stand in its presence? Could it possibly convey the same meaning and intensity as the poetic imagination of the Hebrew scriptures? Emailing a friend in Africa or dancing with an avatar in a virtual nightclub is compelling, but I remain convinced that nothing will fulfill and delight the human heart like the sacred presence of another human being. It is striking that so many millions of people are using technology to communicate with one another. It's as if we are unleashing our naked desire for connection in a wildly ubiquitous way. Even the proponents of Second Life agree. In a current issue of Technology Review magazine, Corey Bridges, a virtual reality producer, admits that the draw is really about connection with others. He says, "It's not an issue of engaging the eyes and the hands, but rather of engaging the heart and the mind. If you can form a connection with someone, even just with a mouse and a keyboard and a video screen, whether it's in Second Life or another virtual world, that is far more powerful than even the best virtual reality simulation." If we look at the inner meaning of the burning bush passage, we can discern another clue as to how divine revelation comes to us. To Swedenborg, the burning bush signifies divine revelation that comes to us through the natural world. The fire represents the pure power of divine goodness, which, if it came to us in purely unfiltered ways, would be too powerful for us, and would absolutely overcome us. The fact that the bush is not consumed by the fire represents the way in which divine truth is always revealed to us through the natural world. We get just as much divine revelation as we can handle. Through our very real lives in this very natural world, we catch glimpses of God. We find ways to connect and to create sacred space. Now, Swedenborg never anticipated the internet, but I think his message is just as valid today as it was 300 years ago. We need the physical world in order to see, feel, and understand God. We need flesh and blood. We need the beauty of nature. We need love. It is through our flesh and blood embodiment that we can authentically connect with others and stand on a space of holy ground. So when tomorrow dawns and brings us one step closer to an even more technologized future, I invite us to take an amazing trip through an unbelievably created world. In this world, people walk on the ground, and they do get old. They have warm skin and generous smiles, and can look you in the eye and speak to you in live, real-time streaming audio. Their bodies like sunlight and exercise, sleep, and good nutrition. With one of these bodies, you can pray, sing, hold another person in your arms, and help someone. You can feel rain and sunlight on your skin. This world is so advanced, in fact, that you can enter into sacred space with another person without any pixels in between. You can look into the eyes of another and speak your heart. When we check out this world called life, we find that in our humanity, we discover our connection with the divine. And we find that it is in the sacred space of connection that we find ourselves at one with the world. And just in case you might have friends who would like to hear this message, I do want to say that a digital audio version of this sermon will be available on www.sfsweetenforging.com. Right, Chris?
Right.
Amen.